Hello, listeners. This is producer John. Open Pike Night is going to be at Trek Long Island 2024. From May 31st to June 2nd, Cameron and myself, producer John, will be in the Big Apple living long and prospering. We'll be hosting a panel. We'll be giving out stickers. We will have our microphones. Be sure to follow Open Pike on social media and subscribe to openpike.substack.com because we also will be giving away some Trek Long Island weekend passes. Trek Long Island is May 31st to June 2nd at the Hyatt Regency in Hopog, New York.
Hey, this is David Jones, and you're listening to Open Pike Night, the best podcast to have on in the background.
Is this thing on? Hello, hello. Welcome to Open Pike Night, the Strange New Worlds podcast where your personal logs are the prime directive. I'm your host, John T. Bolds, here tonight with an amazing guest on stage and callers waiting in the wings to take a look back at some of the smaller roles our favorite actors took on before their names were on the poster, as well as some of the shining guest stars in the Star Trek universe. Joining me tonight are my co-hosts. First up, the man who named Under the Cloak of War as his favorite episode in a season that also contains those old scientists, podcast redshirt Jesse Bailey.
Look, it's not that Those Old Scientists isn't amazing. Obviously, it's amazing. But Under the Cloak of War has so much more, dare I say,
David Jones?
Meat to it.
And the man who is just so extra, host of Green Shirt and Newbies Trek Through the Next Generation, Cameron.
Yeah. See, I went opposite of extra. I get it. Expectations. Okay. All right.
And as if that all weren't enough, tonight we're joined by an actual member of Starfleet Black Ops, straight from the moon of Jigal, actor and model Mr. David Jones. David, welcome to Open Pike Night.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Thanks for being here, man. I mean, we've had callers who have been guest hosts before, but this is our first caller who has also been a guest on Open Pike Night, I believe. After Melissa Navia, of course. Yeah. So you're a very exclusive club.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Well, let's just jump into it then, David. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
I don't even remember. Like, that was so long ago. I always grew up watching Star Trek, so I'm sure my earliest memories were always wanting to be in Star Trek. I even had a Data costume when I was a kid growing up that my grandma made for me. And I still actually have the toy phaser with me, that right there.
Nice.
That's a good phaser.
Yeah, exactly. I grew up the friend. I think my first ever movie was First Contact. I don't remember if I ever saw Generations in theaters. So that just made me grow up with the franchise. And after COVID, I just decided to get into it finally and stop procrastinating.
That's cool.
Now, before that, were you pursuing modeling before COVID then, or how did you get into that?
Yeah, actually, it was actually a funny story. It was Max actually modeling underwear for a local store. And then we ended up, you remember, obviously you guys know the movie Bad Santa with Billy Bob Thornton. Mm-hmm. So that was actually one of my first ever photo shoots, was doing a Christmas themed Bad Santa photo shoot. So I'm sure you can tell how that went. And it just trickled down from there. I just had a lot of people say, you have the look, well, let's go shoot something. And it just kept going year after year. And finally, after COVID that first year, a few friends of mine were like, why don't you go take it to the film industry? It's only down the road from you. And here we are.
Mm-hmm. Nice. How many years were you doing it then?
About 7 years. I haven't done it much since I got into acting, since obviously time availability is so chaotic. Right. But it just started when my debut was in Gotham Knights. And then a few people were, when I was on set on Gotham Knights, were like, oh, I was on Star Trek Strange New Worlds season one. I'm like, I'm going to get there one day. And I saw the opening and that was it.
Very
cool. That's awesome. Were you doing it full time, or was it just kind of a side gig, the modeling?
Just part time here and there, just doing, being creative, having fun, right?
So how accurate is Zoolander to the world of male modeling?
That was a little bit not my area of expertise, but it was. I definitely know people that definitely do that, and it's interesting.
Well, let's listen to Abby's question now then.
Hey, Open Pike and David. This is Abby Summer from the First Flight Podcast. I love background actors, and I love watching background actors. It's one of the things I do when I watch TV, and especially Trek, because there's a lot going on there. So could you tell me something that you have done as a background actor that you didn't expect to make a final cut, but actually did? And what do you do to pass the time if things get a little tedious and boring sitting around waiting for all the things to happen? I figure that background actors get a lot of that, just like you do when you're in any type of performance. So I hope this finds all of you well, and that we get to see David doing more background stuff. Under the Cloak of War was exceptional and sticks with you, and we will all talk soon.
Great question, Abby. I always enjoy your content as well, too. So when I was doing Under the Cloak of War, that selfie I took with all the facial scars, I was actually expecting that to be my big intro into Star Trek. But it ended up being when we're on the moon of Jigal and you see us filling with all the gadgets and computers and stuff like that. That ended up being my intro to Star Trek. And the only time you see me with all the facial scars is actually in the sonic shower scene with M'Benga when he's having the flashbacks. And you don't even get to see it. I'm like, come on, man, really? But in between takes, like, especially on Star Trek, like, I have ADD, so I can't sit around for 12 hours doing absolutely nothing. And you never know if you'll ever get back on Star Trek. So my whole thing was, like, when I did my costume fitting and everything, even the wardrobe people definitely knew, you know, this is not just a regular job for this guy. He's a Trekkie. So that I think they all appreciated that. And, you know, all the wardrobe people talk with the ADs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think they started realizing that on set. So they let me walk around even when we weren't shooting and stuff like that. So just, you got to be in the right time in the right place, right? And you never know if you don't try.
That's cool.
That's really cool that they were like, let's give you kind of the lay of the land and let you do your thing. Cause yeah, I mean, you realized a dream that a lot of people have, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, you don't know if you don't try, right? Like, it could be the only chance I ever get into there again, and I want to be on camera, right? So just a lot of these workers, you know, a lot of these producers, ADs, they'll know who's good workers, who wants to work, and I'm here. Use me, right?
Right.
That's great.
Aside from Gotham Knights and Strange New Worlds, what other projects have you appeared in? Or let's start with worked on, and then we'll move to which ones you actually appeared in.
So I was recently in the Eli Roth slasher movie Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Saw you there.
I loved it. I've grown up all my life watching, you know, AMC Fear Fest on, you know, in Halloween season. I watch it religiously every year as much as I can. And definitely when the Halloween movies show up on there, PVRing, recording it. So the minute I heard that there was going to be a slasher movie filming, they were really hiding it was Eli Roth as well, too. I didn't think they wanted everybody knowing exactly what production it was going to be. So the minute I heard, I'm like, oh, I'm in, let's go. Look how well it ended up turning out to be, right? I was hoping for a glorious death scene, you know, worthy of song and story. Unfortunately, I did not get that.
You do get a pretty good shot of you. What was your direction on that? How did they tell you to perform that?
So Eli was there with us, and he was like, you know, we're having a protest scene. It looks like you're going to be the main security guy in front of the store. Just get everybody, they can't come in near the store, just get them to stay away, right? And let all the customers come out and stuff like that. And that was basically just it. Yeah, just be a big, intimidating security guard. And I loved every minute of it.
And did you kind of come up, what were you thinking when you were performing the role? Did you kind of come up with what your character was thinking at the time, or were you just kind of being a presence?
Just being a presence, exactly. Just I'm the security guard. You are not coming into my store. You're staying outside, and that's as far as you're going to get.
So when they chose you to be the security guard in front of the door, that kind of gets the featured security guard in that sequence. Like, are you all lined up, and they kind of walk by and picked you out, or Was it kind of more happenstance? How'd that work out?
So, have you seen Thanksgiving, right?
Yep. I just watched it last night. Thank you for giving me a reason to finally get to it.
So, I was actually at the, you know, when they're, the main cast go to the Right Mart just before they rush the Black Friday sale. Mm-hmm. So, I was there as well, too, with the other guys. But I think the camera cut me off on both spots. You can't see me there as well, too. Mm-hmm. So, there was about 7 or 8 of us, all security guards, you know, hired for the job to be in the movie, right? But he only picked maybe 2 of us to actually get used the whole time. And everyone else was behind the store, just out of focus, right? So I don't know, maybe there's, you know, producers are seeing something, the directors are seeing something in me. Like, I am mixed race, so I don't know if that's helping with all the BIPOC, like, that they're really looking for right now and using in Hollywood. Or just, maybe it's almost my time.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, Bruce Willis was an extra, Stallone was an extra, and you don't know if you don't try, right?
100%.
Exactly.
So what other productions have you been on?
See No Evil. I was an Anchorage police officer in See No Evil. You Are Not So Invited to My Bat Mitzvah, the Adam Sandler Netflix movie that came out during the strike.
Hmm.
I was playing a bat mitzvah waiter. That was a lot of fun. Adam Sandler was fantastic with all of us. And you get to see you work with Adam Sandler, right? How fun is that?
Heck yeah.
And unfortunately, because of the strikes, there's been a few others that have yet to come out.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Okay. So more to watch
for. Keep an eye out for those.
Sweet.
Yeah. Any series where you've been able to appear on more than one episode?
There is a Canadian series called Robin Hood. So that was not affected by the SAG after strike. It was all a Canadian production. Mm. I was playing a police officer in Robin Hood. You know, the show that it unfortunately did not do so well on IMDb. But it was a fun Canadian production. I got to play a Sherwood Forest police officer with lines as well, too. Oh, and nice. It was actually hilarious because that was some of the hottest days of summer. And it was hot in those outfits. Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome. So do you have a strategy to kind of get seen when you go on set, or do you just kind of follow orders and hopefully that's what helped you stand out?
Follow orders, just be there to work, right? Not cause dramas on sets like that. Like, some of these call times I've had are so super early. I'm too old for drama, so I'm just here to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd rather be asleep than causing dramas on sets that some people do. But I like I said, maybe because I'm mixed race that I seem to be getting pushed to the camera more, or just maybe everyone, like, you all work with so many of these people on set, right? From different production to different production. Mm-hmm. So they always tend to see that you're a good worker, right? And who knows?
100%. I mean, I'll take a little detour to just talk about my brief stint in the extra field real quick. Is I've been in a couple Portland productions. I was in an episode of Portlandia where I was actually getting to watch a Trek in the Park performance. And that's why we got there, because we knew someone who was part of that. And it's funny because you can see me right on the edge of frame, and then all my buddies, you see one of their arms and the rest are all cut off.
You want to be in an extra, right?
That's all right. My luck continued that into Grimm, where I came on for one. You could blink and miss me, but I'm there in that episode. And then the next episode, I came on and got to be a cop, and that was cool. So I got, like, to get into costume and everything. And you see me pretty well in that one. Their camera's kind of following me as I walk by, and then the main guys walk up. And this is the lesson, everyone, is I got a call to come on and be a cop again. I was like, this is it. I'm going to be like that cop who's always in the background. I've got my blood splatter kit from last time. It's going to be great. So, of course, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. But I had just had my kid, and we did not really have a set babysitter call sheet yet. So I was desperately calling all my friends to see if someone could watch the kid. And like the day before, the casting lady called me. She's like, yeah, you haven't confirmed on our website yet. I'm like, yeah, I'm still trying to find a babysitter. And they're like, oh, well, we need a confirmation now. So sorry. And then they never called me back. So
that's brutal.
Be punctual, everyone.
Don't have kids.
I can't.
Oh, wait, no, sorry.
That's interesting, Cameron. Yeah, because I like, if I were going to pick out a role for you, like, based solely on profession, I don't think cop would be it. Mm-mm. But that's
no.
That's interesting.
Well, like
to
I
know.
Said, they gave me the blood splatter kit, so I was the Dexter, I think.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. Right. But I was definitely I was there and I was clocking where the cameras were and like the setups, and so one of them they were like, okay, and then once you walk off screen, just kind of go over in that direction. And I was like, well, they've already said the next shot is going to be pointing that way, so I'm gonna have my character walk that way. And sure enough, you can see me way in the background in the next shot.
I love it.
That's funny.
But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun being on set, right?
And it gives you insight into the industry. If, like, if you want to continue further, because you get to see the ins and outs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had that same experience on Gotham Knights. I was supposed to play a Gotham City police officer. It was shooting Good Friday in Canada. So I'm like, I am not trying to get around Toronto on a Good Friday of all times. So they ended up shooting in Hamilton, the city next to them, filming the rest of the pilot episode of Gotham Knights. They're like, oh, you know, you could be a cop. So this time you're going to just play Bruce Wayne Mourner for his death scene, right? Mm. So I made the trailer. Then they cut me off the shoulders in the episode. I'm like, come on.
Oh, man.
My debut, too. I'm like, come on. I was hyping friends up. You know, oh, look, I'm in Gotham Knights.
Yeah. So what was your biggest surprise, like, starting to work on movie sets?
On the early call times, I'm like, oh, my Lord. And the lack of, like, the anxiety, especially when I was doing Star Trek, the anxiety, because, again, it was still COVID times, right? And Canada had some pretty strict COVID restrictions. So I was trying to avoid people like the plague, you know, because if you caught anything, you were out, right? They weren't, regardless of colds, whatever. So I was trying to avoid everybody. I'm like, this is my shot. I may never be here again. And then just get to that set. So the minute I walked into the wardrobe, I'm like, oh my God, this isn't a party city. This isn't a Halloween store. This is a real thing. I nerded out. Like, I didn't even care that the patch said USS Enterprise and how inaccurate that was. I'm like, I'm wearing a patch that says USS Enterprise. How cool is this?
That's the right attitude to have.
Yeah. Very cool is the answer. Yeah. What's the weirdest experience on a movie set you've had so far?
One of the funniest and maybe weirdest is when we're shooting You're Not So Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. So it was almost about 1 o'clock in the morning. Everyone's been there since like 8 o'clock in the morning the previous day. And I'm on fumes. And there's this old guy that's still dancing around to the Torah and stuff like that. And I'm just dying on set. I'm like, how's this 7-year-old guy outdoing me? Like, really?
That's great. That's good. So are you going out? Are you auditioning for speaking roles?
I've just recently started into that. Like, I'm trying to, like, I got told by a few casting directors, you have to start looking at principal roles. So I've just been slowly trying to get into that. My family was nice to buy me some stuff for Christmas. So hopefully 2024 leads to more.
Hey, nice. What are the audition processes like these days? Are they still Zoom or are you coming in or?
Still virtual. Yeah. Still virtual. Yeah. But luckily I still have a few friends that are giving me tips, aka Michael Chen from Star Trek Discovery.
Hey.
He's helping me. He's helping me out as well too. So yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, another David Jones had to change his name when he got into show business to a certain David Bowie. If you were to have to don a stage name, have you thought about what it might be?
I have a stage name. It's been a modeling stage name for years just for privacy. That's why you see Damon on my Twitter page and stuff like that. I still use that. It was actually when I started doing the modeling, they're like, here, this is almost like your name. So I just kept it for all these years. But I'm sure I'd have to get something a little bit more professional or better.
Damon Jones, is that what it is? Or
Damon, yeah, exactly. D-A-U-I, I think it was D-A-I-M-O-N.
Yep. Okay.
And I've just kept it for years, too lazy to change it.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
I'm going to suggest David Stone, because that's just cool.
He's not trying to get into porn, yeah. Jesse.
No, it's the chiseled jawline. What, Stone is not a porn name. Come on.
It's very 70s, whatever the genre is, for sure.
Speaking of 70s, so I was on Priscilla, and they gave us the 70s Elvis-looking mustaches and stuff like that. And ooh. I'm like, thank I. So they were shooting to Elvis's back, so you avoided all our faces altogether. I'm like, oh, thank God, because you'll never have to see the 70s porn stash they put on me.
Oh, that's right. You were in Priscilla. That's awesome. Can you see your back? Can you spot your back?
You can see my cop hats. I'm like, well, thank God they never see this mustache and sideburns they put on me.
There you go.
Awesome. Well, yeah, of course, many of our biggest actors started out as just another face on the screen at one time, whether as extras themselves or in smaller performances that have been all but forgotten. So in that spirit, we are here to also discuss some of our favorite before they were famous roles in a section we're calling The Artist Formerly Known as Gangbanger Number 2.
Don't forget to check out our Michael Benyer episode.
In honor of that, yes. Even though his character had a name, JoJo, Gangbanger Number 2 is funnier.
It didn't show up in the credits, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
yeah. Yeah, check out that episode. Michael, also just great stories about like rising up the ranks in acting, from small roles to big memorable ones.
Yeah. And we did have some callers and write-ins for this. First up is Kate. Says, greetings all. My favorite pre-fame actor performance is Anson Mount as Reverend James Sterling in the Law and Order episode Church. I had yet to know his name when I first saw the episode, but his portrayal as a closeted gay, ultra-conservative, mega-church pastor-turned-murder suspect really impressed me. Anson's Reverend Sterling is both charismatic and creepy, delivering an oh-so-sincere yet hypocritical righteousness with a soft southern twang and a whiter-than-white smile. I won't spoil the episode for anyone who hasn't seen it, but I will say that while Sterling is a slimy character, you might also feel sorry for him by the end.
That reminds me of another Starship Captain's early role with Nathan Fillion. In, wasn't he the creepy pastor in Buffy?
Yes.
Oh.
I believe so.
I think so, yeah.
If you want to fly a starship, play a creepy pastor.
Was that the beginning of his long-storied relationship with the creator who shall not be named?
I'm pretty sure it was, yes.
It must have been, yeah.
Wow.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now he's going to be in Superman. Come on.
All right. And we do have a couple other calls. First up, here is Marcy.
The section about before they were famous, obviously, I freaking love Ashley Judd. And she was in Darmok in The Game as Ensign Robin Leffler in TNG. And man, as she became a bigger and bigger star, like Double Jeopardy was my jam. Like, I love that. But if I was going to go for another one, it would be Tom Hardy as Clone Picard and Nemesis, because Tom Hardy, he's so hot.
Marcy being on brand.
Yep, I was going to say.
And then finally, we have Newman.
Hi, Open Pike Night. Newman the Space Hippie here from the Movies for Days podcast. Just want to say, hey, how's it going to you and Mr. Jones? You got a thing going on. And it's pretty cool to say hey to you, man. So the call to action this week asked about before they were big stories. And as is my want to do, I'd love to shout out some horror titles and some actors that were in these horror titles who would go on to become big names. These are in no order and there's no organization to this at all. Kevin Bacon, early in his career, appeared in the first Friday the 13th. Charlize Theron, very early in her career, appeared in Children of the Corn 3. Leo DeCaps appeared in Critters 3, very early in his career. Jennifer Aniston, as many know, appeared in the first Leprechaun movie with the great Warwick Davis. Renee Zellweger in The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, for those keeping score. That's part 4 in the series. And Katherine Heigl in Bride of Chucky. Mr. Jones, I'm sure greatness is also ahead for you. And dude, you've already realized such a massive dream that I think deep down a lot of us Trekheads are very jealous of. So a happy day to all at the Open Pike Night. This is Newman the Space Hippie out.
I'll second Katherine Heigl with the classic Under Siege 2 Dark Territory.
You sure? Yep.
I think you're the only person who saw that movie, John.
I saw it, but I don't remember anything.
I did. Anything. Yeah, it's crazy. So many people were background, like extras, right? Or it's some of this list is some of the biggest people in Hollywood now.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of forget that actors usually have a long, long career before whatever role, you know, brought them to your attention. It's always fun to kind of go back and watch those movies and be like, look at that baby face right there.
Yeah.
Shatner when he did Nuremberg, and then he goes into Star Trek. Or I was even going to say myself, Femke Janssen. She was in The Next Generation, then goes into Goldeneye.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And she's in that really strange new movie, Boy Kills World, where the main actor is a Skarsgård, but he's mute. So his internal monologue is played by H. John Benjamin. And Famke Janssen is like the main antagonist in the movie. So I'm glad to see her back in things. Check out that trailer because it is very wacky.
All right. Well, we each brought three of our favorites kind of before they were famous performances. So it looks like, John, you're starting us
okay.
off.
Okay. I guess if I'd had to pick a single person, I would pick Michael Fassbender from this. But I'm just going to shout out the entirety of Band of Brothers. Because there are tons of huge stars in that. And it's funny because there's also a really great after they were famous role played by David Schwimmer in that series. If you haven't seen it, I think he really, really helps cement the tone for the series. And but I will say Michael Fassbender, he's in, I think, 5 or 6 of the episodes throughout the whole. I believe the character he was playing survived the war, but he is never the focus of the episode. But it's like this giant movie star is just sitting there, you know, now. But also, I think it was Tom Hardy's first acting role, and he's even a smaller role, but he's got some lines in there. And yeah, there are just tons and tons of people in that series.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly men.
Yeah. I cannot miss the opportunity to, whatever the opposite of a positive shout out is, mention the while they were famous random scene with Jimmy Fallon in Band of Brothers. Like, what and why? And did somebody owe him a favor? Like, why was he in that? I did not like that, but I, you know. Like you said,
it's the still series a bit itself. Of a tear-jerking scene. it's not a terrible scene.
It lost all its gravitas, but it is an amazing series. Fully agreed.
Yeah. I really want to thank Newman for calling in with that list of horror movies. I actually kind of thought of doing that too, just because so many people did get their start in horror films. I want to single out Kevin Bacon, who, you know, he's fine in the movie, but his death scene in the first Friday the 13th is one of the greatest death scenes of horror movie cinema, and cemented Tom Savini as a special effects artist, which leads into my choice, which I kind of reflects John's as well, as I'm going to kind of mention a cast and not a single person. Instead of going on to Friday the 13th 2, Tom Savini went ahead and worked on another camp slasher movie called The Burning. And The Burning is a kind of stereotypical summer camp slasher film. What I love about this movie, and it does not get the love it deserves, is if you pluck the villain Cropsy, the burnt previous caretaker of this summer camp who is here slashing teens left and right, if you take him out of the movie, if you take that plot out of the movie, it's actually a pretty good kind of summer camp comedy. And that is solely because of the performances of three of the actors here. We have Jason Alexander, Holly Hunter, and Fisher Stevens, just as wee bitty baby face teenagers. And they're putting out, these are all great little characters that you enjoy watching. They're actually funny on their own outside of the horror movie context. And it's just one of those performances, watching it, you could go, oh yeah, these three are going to do something someday.
I may have to look around for that. I had always assumed Jason Alexander was just born 30. So that's interesting to hear.
He doesn't look not 30, I'll say.
Well, you guys know me. I'm all about the Star Trek, all about that space, if you will. And I am going to mirror Kate's pick, but it's from a different role. So I think Anson Mount in Crossroads, hear me out. This is a role where he's opposite Britney Spears, okay? A lot of actors might consider this a throwaway gig. Just play the pretty guy, get your check, go. But Mount offers us an effective sample of his non-toxic masculinity that he has become known for as Captain Christopher Pike. And the most impressive part about that is that his character is a total bro who loves his car more than anything and is literally wearing a puka shell necklace for most of the movie. So I remember the first time I watched this movie with my wife and I was like, okay, that guy, it has like serious magnetism. I don't know if I've seen him in anything else. I don't know who he is, but he can freaking act.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, David, who's your first pick?
I'm always going to lean on Stallone. Like, I think I was reading Stallone did something called Bananas by Woody Allison before he did Rocky.
Oh, and
Look at the career Sylvester Stallone went on. Bruce Willis. How many actors and actresses? Can we say Jamie Lee Curtis? Like, did she do anything before Halloween?
She did some stuff, I believe. She did some other horror movies before Halloween, I think.
But it definitely made Halloween made her.
Yeah, that was her.
Yeah. Brad Pitt. Oh, we always laugh on sets with Brad Pitt forced a line on Charlie Sheen's movie. That's how he got noticed and stuff like that. So we all try to do something similar like that, right?
Ah, interesting. Yeah, I almost picked Brad Pitt in True Romance. He has a great small role on that, kind of like a year or two before he blew up.
Yeah, you don't know if you don't try, right?
Exactly.
I was also considering Christopher Walken from Woody Allen's Annie Hall is another fantastic one scene performance from him. All right, back around to John.
My round two, I'm going to go with Chiwetel Ejiofor. And I'm going to pick Amistad, which was one of his first tiny roles. He's very, very good in that. Also, just remember that movie because it has a massive cast and it was a massive movie when it came out, but it sure seems like it's like gone by the wayside these days, but holy crap, is that movie just jam packed with stars. But it was like his second role. And then, I mean, he didn't have a lot of big roles. And then he made a splash in Kinky Boots and then Serenity. And then it was kind of off to the races there. I want to say probably what made him I think Inside Man. I think his little role as the other cop with Denzel Washington in Inside Man might have been what really started getting him noticed, because he took off after that and became a huge star.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those performers that has a presence. Like, whatever you first saw him in is what you remember him from.
To be able to step into the cast of Firefly and, like, make your mark on their movie is deeply impressive.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if you're not part of that cast, like, the tone of Serenity and his character specifically is so precise. Yeah. Like, to be able to hit that. All right, my number two is, what should I go with? Let's go with Jeff Goldblum in Nashville. I don't think he has a single line in this movie. I don't think he does. But he has such a presence. He's the best character in the movie. You're laughing every time he's on in his weird, like, 70s Western getup riding his big old chopper. It's just, I don't know if any of you have seen Nashville. I saw it once in the theater a few years ago, and I remember being like, oh, well, yeah, you could watch this and go, well, that dude's going to blow up, because just every time he's on screen, without any lines, it's amazing. Jesse's looking up an image right now, and he's about to grin big.
Yep.
I'm double checking the IMDb of another actor because I cannot remember if this was before he was famous or not.
Nah. Yes, Jeff Goldblum, again, another actor who, like, I'm sure whatever you first saw him in is what you remember him from, because there's no one else like him.
Absolutely.
Even before, I mean, what's the first thing you really remember him from? Earth Girls Are Easy?
Probably that, or The Big Chill, or The Fly. Yeah.
That, for me, it was definitely Earth Girls Are Easy. First time I saw that, I was like, is that Jeff Goldblum of Jurassic
and
freaking
Jim
Park?
Carrey?
And Jim Carrey.
I love that, like, throughout the 80s, because I think most people our age kind of picked up on Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park and then Independence Day, and like, oh, he's the nerd. Okay, he's the nerdy guy, the funny nerd. Everything in the 80s, he's playing the hunk, and it's so weird to like go back and
revisit
that. They
tried to make him an action hero. Yeah. Like,
yes, right? It's such a strange
career.
I mean,
even Jurassic Park, he's like got his, you know, oft like celebrated pose when he's there injured, shirtless.
I mean, that's true. That was the transition from like the abs to the nerdy glasses.
Yep.
All right. Well,
that's no, still a classic.
I have confirmed for myself pick number three, but you're going to have to wait to hear that because up first, because like I said, I'm trying to mostly stick to Star Trek. Nope, not for any reason other than I love Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Rainn Wilson, in his first credited movie role as Lonk in Galaxy Quest, which I'm sure everyone listening has seen, but if you haven't, please, please watch Galaxy Quest. It's a movie that lovingly jabs at the Trek-obsessed nerds that I so readily identify with. And he was able to keep the joke running during his time as Dwight on The Office as a big Star Trek fan. He famously wanted to name his child after a Klingon. And eventually, he gets to end up playing a pitch-perfect Harcourt Fenton Mudd in Discovery. So my second pick is Rainn Wilson.
I mean, Galaxy Quest has a few. I mean, we got Sam Rockwell for sure, and was Tony Shalhoub a big name
early
before
Tony
that?
Shalhoub too.
I think he was. I mean, he's bigger than the other two. But yeah, Justin Long
was Wings out before then.
Wings was out before then. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he was around.
Justin
that.
Long
yeah.
was also in Galaxy Quest. I think he was one of the nerds they called to like check the blueprints of the ship or something.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Jack Black definitely has some of the most fun kind of like before he was. Famous roles, spotting him in all those different like 80s or 90s action movies.
He was in The Jackal, right?
I want to go see The Jackal right now.
Well, he had a huge role in that, but Demolition Man, he's got a small part in. There's another big action movie he's got.
I mean, Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks. Yeah, he's one of the like underground guys in Demolition Man. I don't even know if he has a line, but he's there.
I think he's there right near, because don't we also have a weird Dennis Leary like rant in the middle of Demolition Man? Yeah, I think you see him right around that same time. Also, he's in Waterworld. The gunner in Waterworld.
Also, just kind of
he was all
crazy
over the
career.
Place. Yep. All right, David, who's your next pick?
George Clooney. Ah. Saying here, George Clooney was in the miniseries The Centennial in 1978, where he appeared as an actor, as an extra.
Thank you for not choosing Grizzly 2.
Yeah.
Because that performance was nothing to write home about. But he looked good. He did look good.
So he was 17 years old when he did Centennial.
Wow. Oh, man. I'll have to look
up.
I mean,
he's in one of
the
Killer Tomatoes movies, too, isn't he?
Yeah, he was in Revenge of the Killer Tomatoes. Yeah. I love that. Was on my short list.
Wow.
But I don't actually remember his role. I don't remember if there was anything worth mentioning.
Yeah.
I loved him in From Dusk Till Dawn. That's still my favorite George Clooney movie.
100% for sure.
Yeah. Also, I mean, like that was, I think part of that, a lot of people saw that as like his breaking away from the ER hunky doctor. Like, oh, this guy can play something else besides just a good looking face.
Mm-hmm. I really love.
Yeah. And then
he was ruthless. He was ruthless in it too. Yeah.
I really love anytime somebody starts watching ER for the first time, they're like, is George Clooney is in this?
Yep.
Damn right. My last pick, I'm going to go with comedy. I'm going to go with Steve Carell and his run on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart as one of the contributing members. Because like this was back in the when it was the news show and even just before it was the news show. And then all of a sudden he went from popping up on segments now and then and there to the 40-year-old virgin, like almost an immediate jump between those two. I'm like, man, and then just took off from there. But I always like fondly remember his time. He was great. He was great on that show. Every comedian back then, like that show is a who's who of early 2000s, late 90s comedians.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those people went on to get their own shows in a similar format, even like it was definitely a star maker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So before my final one, I do kind of want to give a shout out. I was going to do this one, but it wasn't an acting performance that I wanted to mention. So honorable mention to Ricky Gervais and his singing career before he started acting with Shauna Dancing. It's spelled S-E-O-N-A Dancing. If you're a fan of cheesy 80s synth pop, you, like me, might actually really enjoy the music. I think he's got 4 or 5 singles from it that I have on my playlist. It's good stuff, but it is just so bizarre hearing it. There's not an ounce of irony in this music. He is so sincere and earnest when he sings with Shauna Dancing. And it, to, just to go from that to like what Ricky Gervais has gone on to do and become, like, it's night and day. So it's very bizarre. Look up a picture of him. It's crazy. But my actual final pick, I will go with Peter Dinklage. I think his first movie role was in a film called Living in Oblivion. It was an independent film about making independent films, starring Steve Buscemi as the director,
Dermot Mulroney.
Yep. Dermot Mulroney was in it. Catherine Keener, a lot of great people. Peter Dinklage plays an actor who has to play a dwarf in a dream sequence, who gets very upset about that. And he says he doesn't even dream about dwarves. The only time you see dwarves in dreams are in shitty independent films like this. Obviously taking the piss out of Twin Peaks a little bit. It's a great performance from him. And you could watch it and go, oh, that guy might actually go on to do some stuff. And I think it's safe to say he did.
I got to just jump back one moment to Ricky Gervais, Cameron. I really wonder now if his like offhand joke in the UK office about having sung for a band called Foregone Conclusion was a reference to his time as a musician.
I have to 100% believe that it was. Man. Yes.
I would hope
that's so,
so
cool. I love it.
Yeah, it was just, that was one of those mind-blowing discoveries where you're like, wait, I need to re-examine my place in the world with this new knowledge.
Seriously. All right. Well, my last honorable mention, because now I know we can do those, is a little bit of a cheat. But I think it fits right in here because she doesn't have a ton to do in the episode that she's in, but she fully embodies the role. And it's tiny little bit of a Deep Space Nine spoiler, Cameron, but nothing that's going to ruin the plot for you. Gabrielle Union as a Klingon in Deep Space Nine. I believe it's like within her first two or three credited roles ever. It was definitely before she was the Gabrielle Union. But like, man, she understood the assignment and you totally believe her as a Klingon on a bridge of a bird of prey. But my actual pick for this, and this is the
Who's
one
Gabrielle Union. I think I recognize the name, but I couldn't name anything.
If you Google her, you will go, oh, I know who Gabrielle Union is.
Okay.
So my actual pick for this is the one that I had to look up, is going to be Chris Evans in Not Another Teen Movie. He was in a few like TV shows prior to that. He was also obviously in the Marilyn Manson Tainted Love music video as the same character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was, you could see that it was like, oh, they cast him because he's pretty and he fits the teen movie heartthrob role. But like he really brought it with that. Like that,
he is one of the funniest parts of that movie.
100%.
Because, like, I went into that movie like, oh, they got the pretty boy. I'm like, this guy's hilarious.
Well, and...
And then, like, the same thing with Push. I'm like, oh, they just got the good-looking guy. I'm like, oh, no, this guy's really good.
Yeah. And he gave us such good meme fuel, right? Because after the Avengers Infinity War Part 1 came out, people were able to put "That's America's ass" over the shot of him with a banana and whipped cream.
Yep.
And it was like, I mean, he feels like the kind of guy who could laugh at himself. And I appreciate that about Chris Evans.
Yeah. The one part where I was completely sold on him watching that movie the first time, Not Another Teen Movie, is when the little brother accidentally punches him trying to fend off bullies and he's trying to stop the fight. The little brother actually hits him and he just starts beating the crap out of the little brother. His reaction when he gets punched, I'm like, oh, he is fully into this role. Yes. Like, yeah, that's a good pick.
I might need to watch that movie again.
I know.
Oh, you guys, you know what? I'm also going to toss out Ryan Gosling in Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh,
he's in one episode. He's like maybe 13. And when you see him, you're like, oh, that's Ryan Gosling right there. Like, but I believe it was a Canadian show, Canadian produced show that got really big on Nickelodeon here in the States. So there's actually quite a few big names in that show when they were children. And it's, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that you could watch that and go, that guy's going to be huge someday, because that's not the kind of role that it is. But like, I was watching through it recently with my wife and I was like, that's Ryan Gosling. And she was like, yeah, this is like his first thing. Did you not know that?
I grew up watching that show. Yeah, that was definitely a very popular show up here. And yeah, there are so many great actors and actresses that came out of a lot of the Canadian productions.
And like one of the best TV theme songs of all time. Like kids of a certain generation will still get goosebumps by hearing that song. And not so much for the Goosebumps theme song, in my opinion.
Oh, man. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, let's start talking about Star Trek. I mean, we did a little bit for sure in both those sections, but we had another write-in for you, David, from, Gaynor Jones. Is there a relation there to that?
That's my mama.
Oh, okay. She says, hi, this is David's mom. Son, I am so proud of you doing Star Trek. I remember as a little boy and grandma made you your data suit. Oh, we got some backup on that story.
There we go.
You would not take it off. I had to argue with you to do it. I swear, people, if I didn't put my foot down, he would have ate, slept, and gone to the bathroom and school in it. David, what uniform role would you want to wear next?
I want to be a Klingon. I want to be a Klingon someday.
All right.
But I want to be on the Enterprise Bridge. I never got to see the Enterprise Bridge when I was on Strange New Worlds. I want to be on the Enterprise Bridge at some point.
As a Klingon.
Yeah. So would a sure. video conference call count where they like hail your ship and then we see your face on the bridge of the Enterprise? Or do you want to physically be standing on that bridge?
I want my butt right in that captain's chair.
Yeah. I like it. I'm thinking...
if they let me, of course.
Alternate timeline, some kind of weird thing going on with that. I could see it. I like it.
So when you wore the data outfit, would you also get into like some white paint and just paint your face white? Because I feel like that's what my kids would do.
I do. Like, even though I still have the photo this day, and it still has the white data paint on it right there.
Oh, hey.
That's cool. Unfortunately, my grandma made this for me when I was a kid. I think this was about 1996, and I think I was just watching Best of Both Worlds before that came out. So I think that's when I really got into Star Trek. But unfortunately, she passed away during COVID, so she never got to see me put on the real things.
Oh,
dang.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
But
she was there, and she was making sure I wasn't getting editing out.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
She was your first Bernadette Croft.
I think I met Bernadette Croft when we were in the wardrobe.
I was going to ask.
Everyone was still behind masks in N95s and stuff like that, so it's hard to guess everyone's faces. But I'm pretty sure she was one of the people that was there, you know, altering the suits and everything. The wardrobe people were great.
That's awesome. She and Jess Bush stick out with those Aussie accents on a Canadian set, I would imagine.
Jess Bush was great. Like, I remember I was there for a couple of days, and we were doing long days, right? And she had kids there. Everybody, Jess Bush was fantastic with everybody. I have nothing but great memories with her.
Very cool.
Great. So outside of Strange New Worlds, would you say Next Generation is your like home Trek, the Trek you really grew up on and it got you into it?
Yeah, I would say so, but I've always loved the Kirk movies, the Shatner movies. Mm-hmm. Like, I will die on the hill right now and say I liked The Final Frontier more than I did the motion picture.
I think there's a case to be made. There's a lot of people on that hill with you, I would guess.
Yeah.
Like them sitting around the campfire and, you know, singing all the songs and everything. Like, it had its moments. It was not the greatest Star Trek movie, but it had lots of great moments.
And James Cromwell.
Yeah.
And James Cromwell.
Jeez.
We were talking about him before. Hitting record, I'm now realizing I'm not making a reference to something that was appearing in this episode. So when you were on set, David, like, were a lot of the other extras big Trekkies, or were some of them like, yeah, I'm just here for a paycheck? Like, what was the makeup of that like?
I'm guessing, like, I knew, like, a lot of my friends are extras, so that we've all been on different productions, right? I don't think they were as enthusiastic, like, as big as a Trekkie as I was and I am. I know a lot of the others were in Discovery as well too. Cause again, it's all filmed here, right? But I think I probably would take Bragging Rights. So that was probably the biggest Trekkie out of that whole bunch of people.
Nice. Yeah.
Excellent.
That Star Trek, like we're saying, is full of great guest stars, whether they were known for their acting chops ahead of time, like many of those villains, or, you know, they were just working actors putting on a uniform or the alien forehead appliance for a day or two and making a paycheck. So here's a few of our favorites. Galaxy guests.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Galaxy guests. I didn't tell these guys ahead of time because nice. I knew they would nix it.
You know, it's a good punchline when you have to repeat it.
Yeah, that's right. The best.
When you have to hide it from your co-host until you reveal it.
Galaxy guests. Yeah? It feels like it should work better. It feels like it should be better. I don't know.
I think it's good.
I like cheese. I'm here for it.
It's good, Cam. Yeah. All right. Well, first up, let's hear from some of our callers. Here is Marcy.
Favorite Star Trek guest star? Well, I know Carol Kane wasn't necessarily a guest star, but damn, her portrayal of Pelia was amazing. And when she popped on, I was like, yes, Pelia. But if you want me to pick another one, I'll go ahead with Rainn Wilson as Harry Mudd. He was hilarious and it was a great character.
And here's Abby.
And as far as my favorite guest star, oh, that's really hard. I guess I would really go back to the most toys in TNG and call out Saul Rubinek, who plays Kivas Vajo, because he is amazing in everything he does. And that performance and that episode and that ethical quandary would not have worked without him being stellar. And if you want more of him being stellar, I'm plugging again for all of you to go watch Warehouse 13, where he plays Artie Nielsen, one of my favorite characters ever.
Fine, I'll go watch it, Abby.
Yeah. His one episode of Stargate, like, he brings the heat. Like, it is a very memorable episode of Stargate, and it's mostly because of him, I think.
And before we get into Kate's write-in, I just have to say, you guys, I feel very confident about having similar picks to Abby and Marcy, because,
yeah,
I mean, they're two of our best callers. They always take the prompt seriously. They know what they're doing, so in your face.
All right, we did get a write-in from Kate. Says Star Trek has had so many great guest stars that it was hard to choose, but I had to pick Mark Leonard as my favorite. He appeared in two of my favorite TOS episodes, Balance of Terror as the Romulan commander and Journey to Babel as Spock's father, Ambassador Sarek, as well as one of my favorite Star Trek movies, the Klingon commander in the motion picture. At one time, he was the only actor to portray a Vulcan, a Romulan, and a Klingon. His performances always stood out, and his great work made Sarek one of the most memorable figures in all of Star Trek.
Man, him in Journey to Babel
agreed.
Is like, I mean, talk about a tone-setting performance. Like, the dude is dying, he needs a blood transfusion, and he does not give a single shit. He's like... He's like, yeah, I guess if my half-human son wants to help, that's fine, but I don't care. It's just like, man.
Well, Balance of Terror still goes down as one of the greatest episodes of Star Trek ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, made even greater by Strange New Worlds. I mean,
quality of mercy was so good. Like, that's how you remake an episode properly. Like, I'd love to see the guy that played that Romulan commander. I would love to see him come back and play maybe a future Spock's dad.
Yes, mm-hmm. We want Absolutely. Matthew McFadden as Sarek. I know a lot of the Franiacs disagree, but we are here for Matthew McFadden.
Absolutely.
That's how you remake an episode and almost make it as better than the original was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it makes the original better, too. Like, it makes it, I think it makes it more impactful to go back and watch it after you've seen Quality of Mercy. Like,
yeah.
Those two of those together are a superb, 54 years apart, something like that. Like, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It arguably sets a lot of groundwork for The Wrath of Khan. Like, it's similar tone, like submarine style, starship chase, mm-hmm. You know, like it, I mean, it is seminal in the Star Trek universe.
Would you call Quality of Mercy Strange Worlds' best episode yet?
Ooh.
I have my issues with Quality of Mercy. So
Cameron is going to pick the Elysian Kingdom, which is 100% justifiable. I mean, like I said earlier, Under the Cloak of War, you know, not just because you're here, David, it really was one of my favorite episodes. It might be at the top. Those Old Scientists, as I mentioned, is also amazing. It's great. Mind-blowingly great good episode, yeah. For the amount of stuff they crammed into it. It's an Easter egg heaven. It's a Trekkie heaven, but it also has meaningful moments. I think we discussed that in our review of it. It's like that moment where Una realizes why Boimler was so awkward around her. It's like that kind of makes me tear up a little bit still mm-hmm. to this day. Like that was some serious yep. acting. And the scene between Mariner and Uhura is like one of the most human scenes in all of Star Trek. So I would say for me, it probably goes Under the Cloak of War, Those Old Scientists, and then maybe Memento Mori combined with Quality of Mercy, because those two episodes have very similar vibes as well. It's that submarine movie in a starship.
Yeah, Jesse hates Enterprise because it feels like a submarine in a starship.
No, because it looks like a submarine. They're literally wearing jumpsuits that I could like go buy at a Home okay. Depot.
I think we're going to have to do some episodes where we do a ranking and elimination ranking for best episode. I know we've talked about Ooh. It before.
Mm. But I like when we gamify our episodes. Yeah, we don't do it very often, but it always ends up being fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When we were filming Under the Cloak of War, that episode where Mbenga put his daughter in the transporter, that just finished, I think, the day before walked on set. So I was just in awe of Babs. I'm like, oh, great performance.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, John, I think you're starting us off on the favorite guest stars, Star Trek guest stars.
I went pure full DS9 for all three of my picks. So I'm going to start with the villain on actually some of the episodes we're watching right now, Frank Langella. I very thoroughly enjoy his three episode arc at the beginning of season two. I think he really just brings a quality of like somebody who's trying to take as much advantage in a term, you know, like a tumultuous time in a planet's history and development, and just trying to run with it as far as he can. And I think it goes down. Like I always forget how good those first three episodes are. And I think a big part of that is because mm-hmm. of him.
I thought of him and some of the other villains in those episodes too, but I haven't seen the whole thing yet. I haven't seen the third episode or, you know, most of Louis Fletcher's performance yet. So I didn't pick them. I actually went full TNG because I, you know, have watched and talked about and analyzed a lot of TNG over on Green Shirt, a newbie's trek to the next generation. Catch it now wherever you're listening.
So
to
smooth.
So I will start with, am I biased because he's Leland Palmer in Twin Peaks? Probably, Ray Wise as Leeko, I think, in Who mm-hmm. Watches the Watchers, mm-hmm. plays the proto-Vulcan who almost dies, gets beamed up to the Enterprise, thinks Jean-Luc Picard is God, like we all do, so we can relate. And, I mean, it was filmed around the same time as Twin Peaks, and he's bringing a lot of that same, like, is he crazy? How crazy is he? Energy to the role, and it is a delicate balance because, like, he shoots Troy, I think it is, and, I mean, he is going kind of batty the whole time, but you still have to, he still has a lot of compassion because of what he's gone through, and he's able to pull both of that with this role.
Yeah.
Ray Wise is just one of those actors, like, he is amazing, and I don't understand why he never blew up more than he did, but, like, anything he's in, he just nails.
Well, he was also big in a time where it was like, if you didn't want to be in more than a few things, you didn't have to. You could just make a living on those few things. Like syndication was a very good model. And I feel like we'll probably get back to it at some point. This was hard. I don't know if Mark Alaimo would be considered a special guest in DS9, but I know he was a special guest in TNG when he played the first ever on-screen Cardassian, Gulmaset, and it makes it really hard not to pick him because I have to pick David Warner as Gulmadred in Chain of Command. Like, like, yes, Mark Alaimo originated the Cardassians, but I feel like David Warner really kind of became the blblueprint for Mark Alaimo's Gul Dukat work, like, in so many ways. He balances that ferocity with what might be called humanity, were it not for their numerous atrocities and fascist foundations.
Cardassianity.
Jared. Yes, yes, sorry. The very name is racist. It's a mouthful. But the heavy gravity of that episode just lives on, right? Like, Chain of Command parts 1 and 2 are rightfully lauded as classics in the entire Star Trek franchise. And a big, big, big part of that is David Warner as Gulma Dredd. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I saw an interview with him where they asked him about that episode and he referred to it as a makeup job opposite Patrick Stewart. And I'm like, for him to be able to boil that down to that and still give such a meaningful performance really just shows what a professional he is. And I love, love, love the role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. David.
I'm going to go. I was almost going to say John Locke when he played Admiral Quinn in the Pegasus. Yeah. Like that was a great performance. It still goes down to Pegasus, will always go down as one of the Star Trek's greatest episodes ever. Absolutely. But I'm a sucker for Uncle Fester, so I'm always going to lean on Christopher Lloyd. Because again, he's always had very comical roles, right? He had Uncle Fester, obviously, the other movies he's done as well too. But to play such a badass Klingon and to do it so well, I'm always going to say Christopher Lloyd. He's always been one of my favorite actors, and I love the Addams Family.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to be like one of the few villains ever who actually arguably beats Kirk, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, Khan didn't do that.
No. Like,
it's a serious claim to fame.
I mean,
yeah.
I know he didn't blow up the Enterprise, but yeah. I'll still give him credit for it.
Get out of there! Yeah.
So class. That is, like, I don't watch Star Trek 3 often, but his performance is probably why I would go back to watch it again.
Can we go back and say maybe Ricardo Montalban? Because nobody's made that kind of performance since.
Oh, arguably, yeah. I mean, yeah. He's the mold, right? He's the giant pectoral muscle mold.
I mean, yeah, he did such a good job in his episode. They brought him back a couple decades later to be the big bad.
Yeah.
Feature-length movie.
Like, was it really?
I was seeing this with, like, the Captain Squadron to Nerdy Up North. Do you think Christopher Plummer could have done that performance in reverse them both? Do you think they both could have done each other's performances?
I think they're both good enough. I think Davy Perez asked us that same question when we discussed Star Trek 5 with him,
Star
right?
Star Trek 6.
Or Star Trek 6, yeah.
6.
But I personally don't... I can't picture that just because of Space Seed, right? Because like so much of Khan gets established in Space Seed, and if you watch the two back to back, you're like, oh, he didn't miss a beat. It's like one led right into the other and there was no time between them. So that's hard for me, but I will say I think Christopher Plummer has the chops for it. It was just like I don't know.
And it's crazy too, because Ricardo and Shatner never worked together on in the same room together for Wrath of Khan, right? And it just it works so well.
Yeah.
So if you guys were captains and you could captain any ship in Starfleet, what would be the ship you would want to captain?
If you exclude Enterprises, I would say probably
one that doesn't have a life and death situation every week.
Well, no, not me, because I would say Discovery. Is the spore drive maybe overpowered? Yes. Do I care? No. I really feel that and what's really cool about Disco, obviously, outside of the show itself, is that the ship is based on the original Enterprise design with a more triangular hull than we ended up with on the original series. So it's like they took something out of mothballs, out of archival concept work, and turned it into the starship. And I just, starship, unintentional pun. So I really love the look of that ship. And honestly, even the Discovery A, like, say what you will about detached nacelles, whatever people want to say, that's fine. But I love that ship because it goes from looking old in the Star Trek universe to looking very futuristic. And I love the spinny. I can't get over the spinny. Like, it's just cool.
All right. Well, my second one would have to be, you know, I was playing around with choosing Majel Barrett as Lwaxana Troi because I adore Lwaxana Troi. She is one of my favorite characters in the entire series. And we left interpretation of guest star open. So, I mean, no one's breaking any rules. But for me, I was really trying to think of like one or two episodes, actors who came in and really kind of just owned something and elevated the material. So from a Majel Barrett episode, I'm going to choose David Ogden Stiers as Timison in Half Alive, where he plays her romantic lead, the doomed scientist who almost starts a revolution on his planet, but then goes down and accepts his fate, much to Lwaxana's chagrin. Chagrin seems too light in this situation, but I'm slightly chagrined that my lover has gone to go kill himself.
I mean, it's not like he's the last one she ever had.
No, that's true. That's true. In her autobiography, he'll get like a page and a half, maybe. But you know, he brings such gravitas to this role. It's really an episode that could have gone south, except for those two performers taking the helm and their relationship and chemistry. And it's so touching and heartbreaking. And a lot of that is thanks to the fantastic actor who is David Ogden Stiers,
and his little makeup spots were later reused and became the official look of the Trill. The first time we saw the Trill, they did not look like that.
The cracked egg effect?
Yeah, like...
I was going to say, even looking like Humpty Dumpty, he was still managed to deliver an amazingly moving performance.
Yeah, it was great.
The spots we know now go all the way down. So, okay, so Cameron, as per your mention of the rules, I actually did double check the credits on these episodes to make sure that these people were listed as guest stars because I was worried that I would break the mold here. So I have to go with Paul Winfield as Captain Dathan in Darmok. He manages to convey empathy and pathos while covered in prosthetics and literally speaking nonsense. And it offers genuine stakes to an episode that we all know isn't going to kill Captain Picard. Like, you can't put Picard on a planet with a predator and kill him, right? So all of the tension comes from Dathan and this whole first contact situation, or like second and a half contact, whatever it may be. Bonus, we also know him as Captain Terrell in The Wrath of Khan, and of course, the police lieutenant who tries to keep Sarah Connor safe in the original Terminator movie.
He's great.
Yes, he is.
David, number two.
I was going to say I've always been a sucker for Seinfeld, so I'm going with Jason Alexander. I thought that episode in Voyager is one of the best of Voyager. And he owned, like you guys said, he owned the role.
Yeah.
Man, I'm so excited to get into Voyager, half just because of the guest stars that I know are awaiting me in there. The only Voyager episode I've seen is the one with The Rock, so I've got a good start.
Tsunkatse.
I can't wait. Yeah.
All right. My next choice, I've got to give it to the great Mr. Wallace Shawn as Grand Nagus Zek.
Oh, man.
I definitely thought of that. Again, I've only seen one episode with Wallace Shawn, but he blew me away in that one. Knowing he comes back for 9 more, I felt like I couldn't choose him yet, but I'm glad you did, John.
Well, and that's one of those roles where you're like, he's not really not just being Wallace Shawn, but like, how can you not? Like, he's too recognizable, but it doesn't take away anything from the performance. Like, sometimes when you see a big actor in a smaller role, you're like, oh, that's all I can see. But here, it actually totally works.
Like Clint Howard, he was born to play a Ferengi.
100%.
My next choice, though, I absolutely would be criminal not to include Tony Todd.
Oh, man.
As Worf's brother, Kern. Yes. Another one I thought of, John, definitely shortlisted for me. Tony Todd is just amazing in anything he's in and brought such weight and gravitas to Worf's brother.
Kern is one of my favorite characters. And Cameron, again, I'll just give you something to look forward to. That is not the only role that Tony Todd plays in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, interesting. I haven't even seen Kern in Deep Space Nine. Does Kern come into Deep Space Nine?
Spoiler alert, yes.
I think I heard he did, yeah. I mean, I know a lot of Worf stuff comes into Deep Space Nine, and I cannot wait to see Deep Space Nine handle Worf's mama drama, because TNG's kind of handling of it is okay at best.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine is is really where Worf is best, honestly.
I cannot wait. That's so cool. Yeah, Tony Todd is just so cool, and an amazing person who responded to one of Greenshirt's tweets and talked about how his grandma would watch Star Trek with him and loved his role in eating the replicated bird meat and great stuff.
I remember, I don't specifically remember the episode that I had on, but my wife walked into the room, Kern was on screen, and she went, "Oh, it's the guy from Final Destination." And I was like, I don't know about that. And she like immediately got out the DVD and was like, "See?" And I was like, "Oh, okay." Like, I didn't know he was in a ton of stuff.
Oh, shit. It's the Candyman.
Yeah. I mean, he's in so many things. Great yes. pick, John.
Thank you.
All right. Then my last one is, this is one that is definitely not a great episode. Debatably great character, but the actor, the performer brought it in and made it memorable. I always look back at it as a great episode, and then I rewatch it and go, oh no, it's just Billy Campbell as the outrageous Okona that makes it so good. I love Billy Campbell. He's the Rocketeer. He's in one of the dudes in Dracula. He's so charismatic. He probably should have blown up a bit more than he did, and it's probably just bad luck that there is a bunch of like really charming white guys that kind of looked like him around the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I love Okona. I'm glad they brought him back for Prodigy. It was a really fun role.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
And got to get all smooshy smooshy with Terry Hatcher.
Yeah right?
Yeah. What about Ronnie Cox when he played Jellico?
Yeah. Oh, I shortlist there for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just mm-hmm. fantastic. It's been fun to see how reviled he was. And then over the years, more and more, it's like, no, he's pretty good captain. He's good at his job. And Riker's being a petulant child for most of this.
I was going to say William Marshall as well, too. He was great as Dr. Daystrom in the TOS episode, the supercomputer.
Yeah.
The ultimate computer, was it?
The other big thing with Ronnie Cox is that his character offered that chance for the writers to, like, fix some stuff, right, that arguably needed to be fixed. So I think it worked really well. So I do have one honorable mention here before I get to my actual pick, and that is going to be William Wyndham from the TOS episode The Doomsday Machine, because, I mean, wow, right? It's hard to really put that performance into words, but if I had to, I'd say it's one of those guest spots that just sticks with you, and it's also one of those guest spots that makes that episode one of the best episodes of all of Star Trek, not just TOS. But I could not help myself, and I had to go with Michelle Yeoh as both Philippa Georgiou and Philippa Georgiou in Star Trek Discovery, giving equally believable performances as an inspiring, optimistic captain and a murderous, egomaniacal empress from the universe, kicking ass and taking names all the way to the bank where she cashed her check for her own Star Trek movie.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. yes, credited as guest star every time.
I was going to say, she felt like she was a regular cast member for at least a season and a half there, but.
But there's no episode where she's not special, Cameron.
Okay. Touché.
I got to go with Ricardo Montalban. Like, I've. Mm-hmm. Space Seed was a very good episode, and then he just hit a home run in The Wrath of Khan and just took that performance to another level. I don't think we'll ever see like any performance like that in Star Trek as a villain ever again, but like Plummer came very, very close. Mm-hmm. But it's gotta be, I gotta give props to Ricardo Montalban. Like, he's gone down as the greatest Star Trek villain of all time.
A mantle he wears for a reason.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, we will move into our final segment here, which is specific to your episode Under the Cloak of War. And we're going to kick this off with one more question from our caller and good friend, Marcy.
Hey, gentlemen, it's Marcy from Idle Ride Podcast. I heard you have David Jones on the show, and he was in my number one favorite episode of Strange New Worlds Under the Cloak of War. Partially because it featured M'Benga, my favorite character, who it took me a long time to figure out who my favorite character was. And if he has a story about Babs on the set of Under the Cloak of War, that would be great.
If not, tell us about those costumes. I mean, this is one of the first times we see like a super war armor related costume. Anyway, thanks guys. Bye.
It's special. Like, unfortunately, being an extra, there's etiquette and you're not supposed to talk to the main actors unless they speak to you first. And like I said previously, we just came off that episode of, you know, him putting his daughter in the transporter. So I just wanted to, you know, talk to him left, right, and center. Unfortunately, you know, I didn't get the chance to do that. I mean, I wanted to, of course, but I'm like, yeah, don't get kicked off now. Don't get sent home. You're here. Like it's special. Those armor pieces are heavy. Like we're on the AR wall, right? So it already was hot in there. You're wearing N95s and face shields because it was still COVID times. Putting on the costumes is special. Like I said to you before, imagine walking into a costume fitting. You don't know. I was originally supposed to play an Orion in the Rigel 7 episode. So I had scheduling conflicts with my previous job. So I think I had to back out of it. And then they said, wounded soldier. We're looking for people for a wounded soldier, not a human, not a Klingon, no idea what it was. So I'm walking into the wardrobe department, you know, and I'm seeing the gold uniforms, the command, the engineering, the white medical costumes all hanging up. The mood board has all the rank insignias and everything. And I'm seeing, you know, phasers and all that hanging around. I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like I'm here. I finally made it. So imagine it's like being kid in a candy store, right? Like you're really here. This is not some Halloween costume store. This is the real thing. These are the real outfits. So I'm going there, touching everything. And I'm like being respectful, of course. So when I saw the Enterprise badge on my arm, I didn't care that it wasn't, you know, the Enterprise wasn't in the Klingon War. I'm like, I'm a member of the USS Enterprise. Hell yes.
Still counts.
Yep. Exactly. Just the outfits were tight. And of course, you know, I'm a big broad shoulder guy. So in the zippers are right at the back. So I fell a few times like I was going to pull my shoulder socket out trying to get it off so I can go to the washroom. But it was cool. Like you're walking on sets and you're seeing all the briefcases and everything that say United Federation of Planets. Like it was surreal. Like I was nerding right out and trying to keep her professional at the same time too. Right. Like it's special. This is Star Trek. This is the biggest franchise in the world outside of Star Wars. And I'm here. I'm a part of it. I finally did it. I finally said to myself, you're going to be there somehow or some way. And then, you know, imagine walking on the sets and you're wearing the real Star Trek outfits. It's something that'll live with me forever. Man. And I got to be a part of one of the greatest episodes of Star Trek.
Goosebumps. I totally agree. Now, you did mention being on the AR wall. We've heard that acting on the volume stage can be a little bit disorienting at first. What was that like?
Oh, it's cool. Like what you see on the AR wall is what you see on the TV, right? Or streaming boxes or whatever. It's massive. And that thing puts off so much heat. Mm. Like we're filming this at the end of May. So it was, again, like I said, you're wearing the full costumes. They're tight. It's hot in there. It's pitch black. It's dark. So there's cables everywhere. You're trying not to fall over and break your neck. It's cool. Like the thing is massive. It's surreal. It really was. I'm like, I finally did it. I'm finally here.
So they weren't.
And I enjoyed every minute of it. And I accidentally almost did walk off set with a phaser. luckily, wardrobe, they're very picky and very particular for everything. And you can't go past them. I didn't even realize it. Like the costumes are so heavy to begin with. So I didn't, and it's like a 3D printed phaser, right? So there's not much weight to it. And I was like, they're like, oh, you know, you got a phaser on your waist. I'm like, oh, crap. I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to walk off with this. Like, and they almost busted for me for it. But I'm like, I'm not walking off and taking your stuff. I'd love to have your stuff. Like, I even joke with them. You can keep my paycheck if I can keep the phaser.
So they weren't dripping.
It's surreal.
They weren't dripping glycerin onto your forehead. You're saying the sweat was real from the heat on the set.
Listen, and you're doing like 14-hour days and stuff like that. And you still had to wear, like I said, face shields and masks too, right? Because Canada had some pretty strict COVID protocols back then. So it was hot, but I'm like, suck it up, David. You're on Star Trek.
Brutal. All right. So in this shot, David, I would say that you have a look on your face that I would describe as determined, but not optimistic. Was that direction that you were given, or was that just kind of, did they give you like a mood and you managed to get that across?
Yeah, they were like, you know, you're on the Klingon planet, you're in war, just act, you know, just play, look like you're playing on, you know, monitors and stuff like that. And like I said, I didn't even think this was going to even be a part of the shot. I totally forgot I even filmed part of this. I thought when, because when the whole makeup and everything was for the flashback scene in the sonic shower with Mbanga, and I was hoping that was going to be a big grand debut into Star Trek. And it was definitely, it ended up being that shot. But it was cool. Like, you're lifelong Trekkies. You know how to play around the gadgets and stuff like that. So you have a history with the franchise. So you know what to do, right? Just act your best and hope for the best.
Very cool. Did you?
And it's cool too, right? Because even on the monitors, you see like Rigel 7, Kronos. They have all like maps of everything too. I'm like, this is so cool.
Yeah, and that's somewhat new to the Trek franchise, because it used to just be all green screen or, you know, backlit Elkar's buttons. Did you get to know the actor next to you in this shot, who's definitely not as tall as you are?
Not really. Like, a lot of them, you know, when you're put off the set, you obviously we have like what's called a background holding. That's where all the extras go and hang out and wait till they bring you for your next scene and stuff like that. Like, I knew a lot of the people, so we're all chit-chatting because we're already on previous stuff together. So yeah, most of them, we're all just chit-chat, you know, it's long days, right? So you gotta chit-chat, or it's gonna be a very long day of sitting around and doing nothing.
So you did mention the heavy COVID protocols, but I heard on another show, Captain's Quadrant, shout out, that you literally bumped into Clint Howard. Can you give us that story?
Yes, I did. So I think was it the first day we're shooting? Yeah, it was the first day we were filming. And of course, like I said, I have ADD, so I can't sit around for 12 hours doing nothing, right? So they were the crew were great and kind enough to let me walk around the set. They're just like, stay out of the way. Don't, you know, just have fun, right? And then I'm walking up there, and I didn't even know Clint Howard was on this episode. So I'm like, and I recognized him in a second because I've seen him in Married with Children, Little Nicky, you know, obviously the previous episodes of Star Trek. So I was just nerding out. And I wanted to go and talk to him. But I'm like, no, David, you know the etiquette. Don't do anything stupid that's gonna get you kicked off while you're finally here. But I accidentally bumped into him and he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Howard. So that was really the only interaction I had with him, or I definitely would have loved to talk more if I could have.
Man, that's...
I thought you were going to be like, oh, you started talking to me, I can talk to you now. Okay, so in episode,
you broke the dam.
Well, it's hard too, right? You signed non-disclosure, so it was even hard not, you know, keeping that quiet for the longest period, right?
Yeah.
A long period.
Jeez. So we're kind of dying to know, how are the craft services on Strange New Worlds?
Oh, man, I got fed. that was some of the best food I've ever had. A film project or TV project. I've had some really good ones. I was on the Q's and they gave us like these barbecue spare ribs. And they're like, don't, because I was playing a male nurse. They're like, don't you drop any of that on your outfit. Of course, I accidentally did. So I had to take that out very quickly. But Star Trek, everything except for the instant coffee. I ever since I walked onto Gotham Knights and Star Trek, I'm like, I make sure I bring energy drinks with me just in case. Because it's going to be a long day, and it's definitely better than instant coffee.
I love it.
Nice.
Yeah. So we know from both you and your wonderful mother that being in Star Trek has always been a dream of yours. So now that you have had a taste of the realized dreams, are there any other big franchises on your list that you'd really like to be a part of?
Yeah, I want to be a Jedi Knight in Star Wars. I want to be in Star Wars one day.
Fuck yeah.
But I also, like, my family are all English born as well too, so I have a lot, and I've, of course, being a male, you know, model on the side, I've always wanted to be in James Bond.
Good
henchman quality about you, or
I'd love to be in a Exactly. I'd love to be in a 007 movie. I was a bit like, I remember when they were saying they were filming Beetlejuice, and I heard they're going to be filming in London. I'm like, ooh, is that coming to Canada? I'm like, nope. No. But I would have loved to have been in Beetlejuice. Again, I've grown up with Michael Keaton, Beetlejuice, Batman, everything he's done. And I'm like, that would have been something special to work on too.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah.
You know, he's in Much Ado About Nothing, I think. And I don't know if we can say that's before he was famous, but it's definitely an early role of his where I remember just being like, oh, well, this guy's incredible. This guy can do anything. Like,
are you talking about...
My mom loved him in Mr. Mom.
Are you talking about the Much Ado that has Keanu?
Yes.
I got like 30 minutes into that movie and I was like, I can't do this. Like,
everybody's in that movie.
To be totally fair, I was like probably 14 or 15 when I watched it. So, like, I could probably get through it now, but I remember being like, wow, this really is what it says it is on the box. Like,
oh, yeah, it's straight Shakespeare. But that was going to be my comment, was like, it even made like a 14 year old teenager laugh out loud at Shakespeare.
Well,
Michael Keaton's performance.
You were a much better read 14-year-old than I was, I have no doubt.
But look at the slag Michael Keaton got from going from Beetlejuice to the Batman role. Everyone was like, oh, you can't play Batman. Like, oh, that turned out right.
I recently saw an awards acceptance performance of him where he, like, really stuck it to all the people that said he couldn't be Batman, and it was fun to see.
Because growing up, like, my first exposures to him really were Beetlejuice and Batman. So later on, when it's like, oh, wait, he's a comedian? He does a bunch of comedies and stuff? Like, oh, I did not realize this. And I don't think going back, I don't think comedian is the right word. But yeah, like, oh, no, Michael Keaton to me has always been a serious actor. So
this could be controversial, but it still goes down as one of the greatest Batman movies ever.
Oh,
both that and Batman Returns. Like, I'll go on the limb right now and say I like Batman Returns more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard.
I like that take.
I don't know about that, but it is my favorite Batman movie. So I'll give it that. It's usually in my top five Christmas movies.
Well, David Jones, Open Pike Night is an open mic night themed podcast. So do you have a joke for us today?
Not really a joke, but I did tease it to you guys earlier. A funny moment. I'm actually a pretty quiet guy, so I'm not one to pop jokes or anything like that. But a funny moment I had actually was at Toronto Comic Con the last year before COVID hit. I met with Marina Sirtis.
Mm.
So I was, that photo I shared with you guys, I was wearing a Superman Under Armour shirt.
Mm.
And it was one of the funniest moments I'll ever have with her. She walks up to me with her assistant and says, hey, you know, how's it going? So, yada, yada, yada. And she laughs and says, are those real? I'm like, I laughed. Her assistant laughed so hard as well too. I'm like, yeah, that's Marina Sirtis humor for you.
That's fantastic.
And you were able to say, yes, that's 100% David Jones.
I joke with her. I'm like, yeah, that's not padding. And they both laughed for quite a few minutes too. I'm like, oh, she's such a doll.
I honestly think that might have been Marina Sirtis flirting with you a little bit, just like having seen some of her interactions. Like, she's very real all the time, right? Like, she does not play. So that's really cool. I love it.
Well, thanks so much, David. We've been excited to bring you on and appreciate all your calls and support through the time, and glad to have you on the side of the mic.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. This has been a great time.
Okay, guys, so is it just me, or does David kind of sound like how I might sound if I ended up on Star Trek? Like, please don't fire me. I hope I'm not doing anything wrong.
David was able to form complete sentences, so I think...
he's got me beat.
A stark contrast. Yeah. He would just make sounds of glee for the entire interview. And
that jawline, man. Like, it's no wonder that David made it on camera.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, man, it's interesting. I'm curious when we will get to a point in our interviews with folks where everybody being masked up and distanced isn't going to be a factor. I'm wondering how season 3 is going with if they're doing many or heavy or any COVID protocols. Like, I'm sure they're as worried about health and safety as they always have been. But what does that look like for season 3? We'll have to see.
Yeah, from what I hear, like, the film industry is one of the last to still be taking any precautions. So I'm interested to see what they are. And that had to be so weird, like, to be with so many big names, super professional people, and not really get to see most of their faces at all.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. very strange. But man, I appreciate David coming on here and sharing his stories with us, and how much he's contributed and how much our callers contributed. Jesse, how can folks do that if they haven't before or want to again? How easy is it to get your voice on Open Pike Night?
It's stupid how easy it is, John. All you have to do is go to openpike.substack.com and sign up for our free newsletter to get call to action for free, again, directly into your email inbox so that you know who's coming up next on Open Pike Night. You can also follow us on basically any social media at Open Pike. We don't monitor them all the same, but we do reply to everyone as much as we can on every single one of those. And I'm going to go ahead and say, you know what? Check out openpike.com as well, because it has everything you need all in one place. And if you're not following David on social media, make sure you do that. On Twitter, he's at TheBigGuy86, and he's got great photos. He's a huge Star Trek fan, good memes, fun time all around. Highly recommend.
Yeah. And Cam, that username ending in 86, does that sound familiar for any reason?
A little bit, as you could also follow Greenshirt at Greenshirt87 on Twitter is the account for my other show with John, Greenshirt and Newbies Trek the Next Generation, where I'm watching TNG for the first time. Also, DS9's getting to season two. Lots of good stuff there. Kai Winn, not a great character. I mean, a good character, but not a great person, right? Right? I'm discovering this.
Yeah. It's so fun to hear you talk about her and like make predictions about her and stuff, because you are just scratching the nasty surface right now.
I'm like a pustule. You just can't stop scratching.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Nice. On her, nice. On Dukat. What did you call Garrick on the most recent episode?
The sewing guy.
Yeah, creepy sewing guy. Yeah.
The clothes designing Cardassian or something. Yeah.
I love him. I want more of him.
Yes. I'm really enjoying listening to both Greenshirt and the Deep Space 9 Minute.
Yeah. And I just want to mention, I want to say it's got Star Trek. How dare you? How dare you? I can't believe you guys said that. This is in the future, right? I'm just going to, you know, say pretend.
Presumably they've said something.
Yeah. They've turned on us. It's very strange and we're heartbroken.
Take back all the nice things we said last time.
We're starting a podcast beef. Yeah. We're sick of being in a community.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to hear what they said, go listen to the most recent episode of It's Got Star Trek. I'm sure they said something horrible.
We just read a marketing newsletter that said drama brings more people than unity. So
exactly.
We need a beef. Will you be our beef? It's got Star Trek.
We didn't start this podcast to make friends.
will you beef us, please? That's how it works, right? That's pretty crazy.
That is how it works. Yep. Oh, well, thank you once again for joining us.
Beef's really enough.
Yeah.
Nice callback.
Thank you.
We have to clean up all the beef stroganoff, so be sure to clean up after yourselves. Be sure to tip your servers. You can go anywhere you want, but you can't stay here.